Hello and welcome to the Third Sector Show. And in today's edition, my radio conversations head to Southampton.
This is the radio industry's very own radio station. 24/7 in radio.
I'm Dom Chambers, and this is a city that I have strong associations with, going all the way back to childhood bus journeys into the metropolis for fun activities such as ice skating and the occasional Christmas panto. Later on, in what I can now look back on as a happily misspent youth, I went to art college right in the middle of Southampton and proceeded to spend the entire year in conversation and actually doing very little by way of art. Although I suppose I was working on the art of conversation and that would turn out to be somewhat helpful later on. A later on that would include two stints at BBC Solent in the late 1990s and halfway through the last decade as well. Since those times, of course, community radio has arrived here in the UK, and Southampton as an area has not been immune from the benefits of community broadcasting. And so it is with my Third Sector microphone that I'm heading to two fine community broadcasters in the form of Southampton's Voice FM and just round the corner, Unity 101 Radio. And it is absolutely key to my conversations that I find out what the purposes of these organisations are and the benefits to that wider community, both in terms of the impact on volunteering individuals as well as their audiences of the work that they're doing. And I enjoy really interesting conversations with Kevin Scott from Voice FM and Kelly from Unity. But before I get stuck into those, a quick reminder that one of the main purposes of doing this Third Sector show is to see what we can all learn from how people are going about doing essentially similar things in different parts of the country. I've been running a community radio station in northeast Somerset for the last 10 years, and I've learnt so much in going around and talking to other people about how they're running their stations and how their presenters are making grassroots, independent and community media. And in this particular edition, training is really important to both the radio stations I go to, and we find out how they're going about it, and also if there are accredited outcomes, and is that in fact the most important outcome? No, it isn't, is the short answer. Details to follow. And there is that great preoccupation of all of us in this business of how we find revenue streams and how we fund the work that we're doing. Kevin particularly talks about building relationships across both the business and charitable sectors of the communities they serve. And Kelly zooms in on the whole ethos and culture of inclusion and how that is so fundamental to what they're doing at Unity. Now, some time ago, I did commit in these programmes to profiling those stories of great impact of how community radio has made a big difference on people's lives through their inclusion and participation. And I get some great examples from both the stations I visit, and particularly Simon Wilson's story, who I bumped into at The Voice, and is a really good example of how someone is not only building their career, but also those essential confidences and skills that we all need to make our way in the working world. His story coming up. For now, though, it's late 2017. I've arrived in Southampton. I've located Voice FM. I've had a tremendous welcome where the station manager came down to the street to make sure that I was headed in the right direction. And with coffees steaming at our side, it was time for the conversation to begin. In
radio. My name's Kevin Scott, and I'm the Director of Operations here at Southampton's Voice FM.
How long has Voice FM been going for?
Voice FM was set up in 2008 and went live on air in September 2011.
Tell me why Southampton needs a community broadcast. As it happens, there are three, I think, here, aren't there?
There's actually four official granted community licences in Southampton. The reason it needs that many, as far as Ofcom's concerned, is because we have a diverse community. There's lots of sectors of the community. Unity 101 will look after the Asian and ethnic minority groups. And we here at Voice FM are looking after the young people of Southampton. So the 14 to 34-year-olds is our target audience. Having 44,000 university students in Southampton, you understand why we do that. The two new licences that haven't gone live yet, one is ASWAS, which is a very similar service. It's quite controversial to what Kelly does at Unity, but I'm sure Ofcom have their reasoning for granting that licence. And the fourth one, which also hasn't gone live yet, is Siesta FM, which is the Hispanic community licence.
There's loads I want to talk to you about, Kevin, but as soon as we met, which was only a few minutes ago, you come over as somebody who does know what they're doing, has got a strong sense of vision. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your own background. I'm imagining that whatever that background is, radio is a sort of underwriting passion.
It totally is. Thank you for that. I've definitely got a connection with yourself as well. I think we come from the same backgrounds, maybe. I started professionally DJing when I was 15 years old. I was given the opportunity at the Academy in Bournemouth, and it was an under-18s night, and hence I was 15. I went along there, and I was amazed. This was in the discotheque era of 1984-5, and I was amazed, you know, with the lasers and lighting and everything, and it was definitely something from that day forward that I needed to be involved in. I was very fortunately given open arms from the DJs at the nightclub in Bournemouth at the time, and very quickly spent all my spare time learning how to mix on turntables and vinyl back then, and quickly became a professional DJ, allowing me to do the under-18s nights initially, and then I travelled the world working for a lot of big, large companies. I could mention loads of names: Ministry of Sound, MTV, dance floor, etc., etc.
Did that include commercial radio networks?
What I did is, because I've lived abroad for 12 years of my life, 7 years on the Costa del Sol, 3 years in Cyprus, 1 year in Morocco. So what I did is, because my passion was music and we were going through a big change in music, you know, dance music was starting in the 80s, I then naturally knocked on the door of local radio stations wherever I was. When I was in Spain, I was working for two radio stations. One was 340 International, Bella Madna, and the other one was NERCA. I think it was called Coastline, something like that. So to extend my DJ career, I felt that it was necessary that I should have some on-air as well, and naturally learn how to become a presenter as well.
Coming into the community radio sector, how did you make that transfer?
Well, as I got older and bolder, and if you could see this, I am now bold, a 49-year-old man, I can't jump around on stage anymore in front of 2,000 young people having a rave. So I decided to take radio as a full-time career, and a good friend of both of ours, David Harper, gave me that opportunity, a new station in Bournemouth, which was a commercial license called The Energy, which has gone on to be now, which is still The Fire and owned by Celador. And he gave me the opportunity to do a specialist show at the weekends and trained me as part of that to be a proper presenter. And I did daytime presenting after that.
Interesting, because David's pretty well moved into the community sector as well with Andover, isn't he?
He has, totally. He got a new license for Andover, and congratulations to you, David. From there, I went on working for the local radio company, And when they took over Fire, because it was renamed from Energy, as I said, I then joined that group, and not only was I doing daytime on Fire, but I was shipped around that company and I was pretty much everywhere, including Spire FM in Salisbury, 3TR FM in Warminster. I did breakfast on that. Spire, I did drive time, and a few of their other stations. I was also Southern Area Production Manager for 22 stations. So I had to, as my second job, as you well know, you have in commercial radio, that was my second position of doing lots and lots and lots of programming and production work.
So what informed your own progress into the community sector? Was it about the challenge of setting up a station?
It wasn't that. What it was is I did some youth work out of the YMCA. We were setting up Hope FM in Bournemouth about 12 years ago, something like that, with Blair Crawford and the team at the YMCA. And Blair asked me if I'd like to do some media youth work. So I went on to study. I haven't been, obviously, to school since I was 15, but I went on and did some night school and got my level 2 and 3 in youth work. And the benefits to people that I got out of that was worth more than money. I had managed to help some young people, very vulnerable young people, change their lives through media activities that I was doing with them, whether that was DJ workshops, whether that was photography, or whether it was just life skills and getting somebody who potentially could have gone down the wrong path, either with crime or drugs, and helping those have a self-worth in life and achieve just basic skills that we take for granted, you know, confidence, life skills, being able to communicate with people. And I got a great sense of worth out of that. When the opportunity came up at Voice FM in Southampton, it kind of was like a mixture of that youth work that I did and my media and DJ background. So it kind of like engulfed everything I'd done in my life into one. And now I sit here at Voice FM trying to give those exact skills back to everybody here. I'm not here for my glory. I don't care if they mention my name here at all. What I want to do is the 131 volunteers that we currently have at Voice FM, and that will increase next month with the new freshers from the universities when we're at their freshers' fairs, when new volunteers sign up. And as you heard a phone call just then, another person trying to get on board. I want those volunteers to achieve. I'm here for them. I'm just facilitating their learning. They're going to have to do it themselves. And I'm going to tell them how tough it is out there. But I want them to learn and this to be a stepping stone in their career. And I believe, you know, I'm very sad about the way that commercial radio is becoming less and less local. And I really believe that community radio is filling that vital gap.
One of the things that I really liked when I first came into these offices and studios, obviously first impressions count for a great deal. You came down to the street to meet me, very welcoming, and that's always really nice. But then you had to take a telephone call, and it was from a prospective volunteer. And the first thing you said is, there are always volunteer opportunities here. And that, to me, just sets the tone for the kind of radio station I want to visit, frankly, because it's also the radio station that I run down in Somerset. We've never turned away anybody who has been interested in somehow being part of our operations. And it's amazing when I'm travelling up and down the country, but not everybody has that ethic. And sometimes that's understandable because, you know, there's other challenges like how we're going to pay the electricity bill this month and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I really liked that as I came in. And I'm very stimulated by what you're saying about these transferable skills or the skills that can open up other life opportunities. Here with your training, I imagine this informs how you go about training. We're all in the business in running radio stations of getting people who volunteer the skills that we need them to have and they need to have to go on air so that they get the most out of it. And they don't let themselves down. They don't let the radio station down either. But training has a wider purpose, does it not?
It does. Training has a purpose for your life. And, you know, giving people the ability to speak to other people is, believe it or not, getting less and less likely. With the blow up of social media, people are communicating on their phones, on their tablets, and the personal relationships between people is becoming less and less. And I think we are actually bridging that gap where we are training people to actually communicate with other people. We know as radio presenters, you're only talking to one other person and you need to befriend them. That's how we broadcast. But, you know, it really is life skills. And some of the people that come here, it's interesting you said that we don't turn anyone away. We don't. We run projects for the lottery, and that is for NEETs. That project that we run every single year.
We should outline what NEET means.
Yeah, not in education or training. And that is for people that perhaps could go down the wrong route unless they were given an opportunity. Now, people say, how can you do that at a radio station? Well, there's lots of ways. And to answer my own question there, if they're into sport, there's something around media that we can do around sport. If they're into gaming, video gaming, there's something around video gaming that can be done. Everything in media is in today's society. And I believe that this is the way forward in transferable skills.
Online 24/7 and worldwide in radio.
At this point in our conversation, it seems opportune to break the conversation and get a first-hand example of the kind of impact that Kevin's talking about with his training. And it was while I was at Voice FM that I met one of their key volunteers, Simon Wilson. And I began our talk by asking how he'd come to radio in the first place.
I've been involved in radio from student radio days. And then I moved forwards to wanting to work in radio. So I originally looked at a radio station in Portsmouth, which I live in, but they didn't have any opportunities at the time. And I so happened that Ben Glover, who used to be on Parafem, which is a station I used to listen to as a kid, I followed him on Twitter. And he just went, oh, this new station started in Southampton called Voice FM. So I was like, OK, I'll get in contact because I followed him on Twitter. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I got in contact and I joined. I originally just started off as a lunchtime presenter, but music's always been my main passion in life. Like, I'm quite obsessive with music. And I wanted to get more involved in the music side, so I started doing the lunchtime show, but also I kept bugging the management for new tracks, new artists and things like that, and eventually moved up to becoming the music manager for the station. And then I brought in a playlist, which enabled us to get record labels involved, so now we can get the modern stuff as soon as we can get it. And it's also led me to interview some people as well. So then I've moved up to drive time. So now I get the interviews along with the music.
What motivates you? That I get the whole music and the passion thing, and it's great that you're contributing then at that sort of managerial level here at Voice. Is there anything else that motivates you in presumably quite a high weekly commitment for you?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I do question that. It has always been the idea, because I've always wanted to get into radio, and obviously it's a very difficult market to break into. So I got into community radio as a sort of stepping stone. The end goal is always to work in radio and try and get a paid role in radio. But I actually just, I love presenting radio, whether it's paid or not. I love doing it, and I love sharing my passion for music and actually getting the interviews and stuff like that. And that's what kind of keeps me going, really. It's just, because each week I'm finding new stuff out. I'm getting 100 odd tracks a week. I'm finding new things. I'm finding new bands that I love, and I get to share that passion with people, and that kind of keeps me going, and it's great.
When I was getting into radio, I mean, really, it was just hospital radio, was the volunteer background to where you could develop your skills. And there's a lot more student radio around now. Hospital radio still exists very much, an impressive network. But of course, the growth of community radio has got to be considered now one of the main, if not the principal, training sector for the professional networks. How's your experience then with the stepping stone approach?
Like I said, I started with student radio, and there I didn't take it very seriously, and nor did the people who were involved with it. So I think that's kind of where I failed a little bit. But here, it's definitely taught me a lot more, especially Kev, the manager, and a few other people in the management have worked for commercial radio, so they know what is expected, which is very different to what I thought. Like, I just thought you just shut up, you could do what you want. Well, I didn't really think that, but like, there's a lot more structure, which we've started building in. Because when I first started at Voice, there wasn't really much structure. Whereas now, like I said, with the playlists and things like that, kind of gets you more ready for, say, if you were to move to a commercial station, which is you walk in, you have 30 seconds or what, you know, and you don't have much freedom. But it kind of almost getting you ready for that. But here, there's still a lot more choice and freedom, which is quite nice. It's kind of that gateway, which is quite nice.
One of the things I think that's so important about when you're developing your skills and your experience is that although we're a volunteer sector, most people who are at a community station are there voluntarily and often for the love of radio, but there's a lot of responsibilities. There's a responsibility to law, there's a responsibility to the broadcast code and the regulator Ofcom, there's a responsibility if you're training under 18s to parents and carers, there's responsibilities to advertisers, to sponsors, educational partners, and so it goes on. How does that help you as you're looking to increase your professionalism?
That's helped an awful lot, especially because I'm a volunteer, but I'm in a management sort of position by being the music manager. It almost feels like an actual full-time job, even though I've got a full-time job on the side. So I'm kind of doing two full-time jobs at once. And, you know, organisation skills have improved tenfold because I have to be so organised to be able to make a playlist each week, plus present a show, plus do a normal job. So that also, just those sort of skills, and like presenting, that's helped. I've been on air for 5 years and then doing interviews, so my confidence has grown in that area as well, which will be transferable to actual radio. And also that personally has helped my confidence dealing with just people in general, because I've always been surprisingly a shy person. For people who know me, I'm quite shy, but that's actually helped me come out of my shell. The fact that I'm kind of sitting in a room with, I call them like, you know, celebrities or whatever, you know, it's kind of, when I first walked in, I was like, I don't know what to do. Whereas now I'll sit there and I'll make jokes with people. It's helped me build my personal confidence as well.
Well, you've actually delightfully articulated what was going to be my last question, which I'm going to ask anyway, just to see what comes out. You've been here at Voice for a long time. You've obviously a tremendous contributor here. What does this community radio station mean to you and your own progression?
It means pretty much everything. They've pretty much taught me everything. So if I do move on to commercial radio, Voice will be responsible for that. They have been the stepping stone, the people that have taught me what I need to know and how to go about it. And I kind of owe them everything. So I can't really say much more than that. They really have helped me an awful lot, and not just this, like I said, with the confidence and everything, but for me personally is a massive thing.
Simon, I'm sure you've got a lot going for you. I wish you all the luck in the world as you progress into the professional networks, and I'm sure you won't forget about Voice and what community radio has meant to you. Will you keep in touch with Third Sector and let us know how you get on?
Always will. I'll never forget.
Online 24/7. This is the radio industry's very own radio station. In radio.
How about the whole area of accredited qualifications? Because every radio station I go to in this country is doing training, but often the people doing the training wouldn't mind a certificate to say that they've got those skills. And where's Voice FM with that?
Right, this is something we've looked at. We're actually in a City College building, as it's in kind. We don't pay rent, or fortunately, here. We're given this building in kind. Sadly, that's coming to an end next year because the acquisition of the premises have been taken over by somebody else. But we have been talking to them at length about an accredited certification for the learning. They're volunteering their time. And there should be some accredited learning outcome for that, whether it's just a basic skill or level two, there should be. I mean, I taught media myself at City College for a whole year 3 years ago, and the outcomes from that, they gave me quite a lovely bunch, you know, and pretty much they were tearaways. It was, you know, I'm not judging them, but we managed, out of 16 young people, we managed to get 12 through, and five of those with distinctions. Now, that was a great achievement, and that was in audio production. I believe that there should be some accreditation, just a basic award. But actually, the accreditation, Voice FM has a really good track record of actually getting people into the industry. You know, whether that's just a job at a fast food restaurant, if you could see the challenge that that person went through to get the confidence and the skills to learn to be on that front and say, good morning, welcome to, you know, and that was a massive achievement. But we've had people that left here, they've gone to ITV, they've gone to the BBC. There's one that's gone to Sky Sports doing the production. There's one that's gone to do the production for the PGA Golf European Tour. They're getting real life experience here to go on to other radio stations and TV. And I believe that that is a bigger accreditation than just getting a certificate. What seems to be happening in the employment sector with these young people, and Celador Radio across the road has taken three of our presenters, and they are still presenting on different stations for Celador. They are taking on people who have real life experience. So they've given 2 years of their lives to do a breakfast show free of charge. Celador is taking those people on rather than somebody that's just left with a degree from the university with, you know, with a media degree. And that is becoming the norm.
Do you think that there's a need across the nation for a basic level certificate of competency? The areas of training are technical use of the equipment, on-air guidance, and also knowledge of the broadcast code and any legal consequence. Do you think there's a need for a general or a basic level competency certificate?
There is in each one of those fields that you mentioned, and I think you could maybe come up with an accreditation of each of those. So production, you know, life skills and communication, maybe something along those lines. And what we need to do as well is go out there into the commercial sector and say, look, you need to recognise these. These people have worked very, very hard to get this certification. Don't look at it as a level one or very, very basic. But I do believe that is needed urgently.
Would you be interested in developing it?
100%. It's something we've looked at, we want to do, we've spoken to City College, and it's something that we do want to develop and we think is definitely needed in this sector.
Well, having got some great stories of impact from Kevin and also come to a very clear understanding of the training offer at Voice FM, I am once again going to interrupt my conversation with Kevin, because now is a good time to hear from Kelly from Unity. Now, Kevin and Kelly have been working together for years, and when it was time to go over there, which wasn't very far away, Kevin hopped in my car and we drove round together. I will be picking up with Kevin a little bit later as I close this edition of the programme with thoughts about the national needs for community broadcasting. Meantime, it's over to Unity Radio, and once again, the welcome was fantastic.
We are in radio.
My name is Ram Kalin Kelly. I represent Cultural Media Enterprise Limited, which is the operators of Unity 101 Community Radio here in Southampton.
Now, I'm aware that there's a number of community licenses in Southampton, so perhaps you could explain what Unity's specific purpose in broadcasting in this city is.
Its purpose is to broadcast music and culture and chat to our target audience, which is Asian and ethnic. We broadcast in 10 languages and have done so since we've got the license in 2005.
Really simple question, right? Because I run a radio station, we broadcast in one language. How do you know that all the languages, unless you're the most amazing linguist yourself, how do you know that all the languages are, or people speaking in those languages are compliant with our regulations?
Yes, indeed. We have a charter which they have to adhere to. We don't do politics, we don't do religion. We are unity, so we unite people through that. Our main output is Hindi, English, and Urdu. And then with that is sandwiched other languages, Bengali, Polish, and Afghanistan. So in a way, we are very lucky, Touchwood, that we hadn't had that problem, that they adhere to the rules and regulations that they must learn and understand.
There's two ways, generally speaking, there's two ways that a community broadcaster impacts, and there's strong overlaps between these two strands. One is on audiences and what you're doing as a broadcaster, and the other is on the participating individuals. To start with then, how are you impacting on your target audience?
We're able to create a family, which is the first and foremost in form of volunteers. We have trained 272 volunteers over the term that we're running. We currently have 97 active volunteers. These volunteers create the bond and the foundation of a family of unity. These individuals then create friends within themselves. They go back to their homes and the area where they live in, and they spread the word in that unity, and therefore it grows. Also, when they have events, we are there to support them and promote them and enlighten them so they become more popular and more people get engaged in it. So it's first and foremost, it's localized here at Unity where they grow in terms of physical connection. Secondly, they go into the communities and they engage with their communities and then they spread the word. And finally, when those volunteers are involved on air, they relate to those listeners. And of course, when they go outside, they hear about the people and becomes a talking point, the fact that you're a radio presenter.
I'm assuming then it's an ethic of the station to sort of generate a sense of inclusion and celebrate diversity in the city of Southampton.
You couldn't have said it any better than I did. It's spot on.
Well, let's then look about the immediate impact you have on people who come in here and help produce the radio. There are so many reasons why people want to volunteer at a community radio station. One of those is about building their own confidence, perhaps how they think of themselves, their self-esteem, and of course, their skills. How are you going about those strands here at your radio station?
We have a 30-hour accredited college course, which involves all the things that you just mentioned. And we're particularly keen when people are vulnerable, people are lack of confidence, and they're inspired to become better people. And we encourage them. Our key factor is that 80% of the time you'll do brilliant, 20% you'll make mistakes. And that's okay. And we work on the 20% through encouragement and motivation and to gear them up to work better. We don't have best presenters or weak presenters. Everybody's the best in their own way. We don't have internal competitions. We don't get involved in competition with community awards and radio awards because everybody's the same. Everybody brings something to the table and everybody has their own style and personality. By doing that, everybody's the same. Also, the volunteers, 32 volunteers are still here after 10 years. That's the welfare of the volunteers that is important to us. And by looking after them and them feeling part of the radio station and having the ownership of the radio station, they then help the new recruits to come in and encourage them and make them feel part of it. We also have a very, being an Asian station, naturally, we have an open door policy. So when people come along here, we welcome everybody else. I don't have an office that I can shut my doors in. My office is in the corner. So everybody's welcome and there's constant interruption, but you work around that. So I think what you're doing is creating that inclusion and diversity where everybody feels part of it. You know, there's always food to eat here. Somebody brings food in there. Everybody will share in it. And that's just the way the nature of the Asian culture is. But equally, it's the same culture that the ethnic people bring into it, from Poland, from China, from Afghanistan, and Bengali. It's the same thinking. And if you thread that through and promote that, it just goes everywhere.
I love the way you've articulated that. I'm going to just pick up on one thing you said at the start of that answer, and that is that there are accredited qualifications to the training. Could you expand on that a little bit for me? Who is the examining body? Who's your educational partner? And what are the qualifications people are achieving?
The educational partner is Southampton City College, has been there from day one. I developed the course myself because from research I found there wasn't a course long enough yet short enough for volunteers to come in and be able to go on air. It's a 30-hour course, it's modular course, and it's evidential bookwork which goes to the EV at the college who has to sign it off for them to get the certificate. And then each volunteer is granted a certificate in front of 300 guests invited on the annual event. And I think by doing that, we're able to get them on the air at NVQ Level 1. Okay, if they want to go further, that's fine. We can guide them onto that, but we don't do that. But even though 30 hours is enough to get them on the air, but it's constant ongoing support and encouragement and training. We never stop. Even those people have been here 10 years, I'm still training them and, you know, helping them. And certain people have more journalistic approach to it. We will help them on the rules and regulations of Ofcom. We'll tell them how to ask questions, how to be impartial, how to get it right so you don't get the worst or the best out of it. It's a balance. And the other important thing is, as a broadcaster, we don't do negative publicity. We truly believe that most of the people do brilliant work. They really do. We're not like normal standard print media where we're always looking for dirt. We're not looking to increase our listeners because of that reason. We're looking to increase our listeners because people are good at doing that. If somebody in the local community has just passed the exams, well, we will bring them on the air. That to us is a story because it's important to their family. So it's important to our family. If somebody's died, we want to announce it, the fact that somebody's died, let's pay our respect. So this little things is what makes the local radio, to me, a really good, important media. It connects with local people. At the same time, if somebody from Bradford or somebody from Scotland email me and they wanted help from another community radio station, not a problem, because that's what we are. We're a big community radio station all over the country.
What you've done there is you've really successfully articulated that the outcome is so much more than the certificate. And the outcome is the radio that you're offering and the ethics that drive you. But in terms of the certificate, do you think there's a need, a wider need, for perhaps a basic level competency certificate for our sector?
I think when volunteers volunteer at local level, some of them inspired to go on to become bigger than they wish to do. And we encourage that. And to date, we've had about 12 people going on to become successful, going back to India. And you know, in fact, as I speak, one of our young ladies has gone and has just received the Radio Mirchi Excellent Award, which is a big national radio in India. Somebody's gone to join Radio London Live. So this is inspirational. But some people just want to continue volunteering. So it's giving them those tools, but also encouraging them throughout the journey that with us, looking after them, caring for them when they're ill, caring for them that something goes wrong in their family, and helping them. And not just that, well, they've come along for volunteering, they've done, you know, that's the end of the job. Extend that hand of love, care for them more. And then if they are not able to make it, understand they're making. Don't just tell them off. Just say, okay, well, I understand, but it's my job to make sure those life outputs are covered. So I think a remit of the certificate is a recognition, which they can use it in a CV. It's also a tool they can use to grow in whichever way they want to go. And in terms of transferable skills, their confidence grows in such that within the jobs that they're doing, they just feel more able to deliver things that they wouldn't probably have done that. And, you know, if somebody wants more out of life, we will help them. We'll go the extra mile. And I said earlier on open door policy, if somebody's got additional problems, nothing to do with radio, it could be form filling for a council, it could be, you know, other reasons, we don't turn them away. We say, let's sit down, let's help, can we work together? It is, after all, a community, and community is made up of people. The model that we have here is very simple. It's not clever, it's not ingenious, it's not advanced. It's saying, care for the local people, care for the individual, generally, not just make-believe, and community, the word community to me, it's further than just community radio. It's the community as a whole. And with that comes the tools that you need to arm them with, a course that is structured and they can then deliver at the end because you want good output. You train them and be aware the balance between music and speech and provide the output that the quality is comparable to any other station, whether it be the BBC or commercial station, because the listener thinks, well, it's a radio, so why is it not sounding as good as the other one? So processing and getting the levels right, all those things are important. But equally, at the same time, if they sound good on the headphones to themselves, they will love themselves. If they love themselves, they'll give it more.
Can you think of an example where the kind of training, the sense of inclusion, everything that you're doing here that you've described has had a particularly extraordinary impact on one individual?
Well, I mentioned earlier on this lady in India. She's actually is part of the management team in India. India is owned by Times of India, and they've got a brand called Mirchi Radio. And she is now just growing and growing. Raja Vakas is in Pakistan is going on. But locally here, we work with our partners. We work with Breeze, with Sam, with BBC Radio Solon, because we're not in competition with anybody. We work together. When they need our help, we'll ask them for help, and vice versa. And resources will be equipment. And we have a wonderful partner in terms of Voice FM, which is a local community radio station. And we work all the time together. We support each other in whatever way we can. I think it's very hard to pick one individual because all of them have different things. When one of the young ladies went to join London Live, we were so excited to join. And in fact, one person I can definitely speak of is Veronica Gordon. She is a single parent family. She went on to the university, worked really hard to get where she is. She went on a course at Highbury College, right, an intense course, journalist course, and she ended up being a video journalist, a reporter on ITV Meridian.
I'm going to bring Kevin in at this point because you were talking there, Kelly, about the cooperation, the collaboration between the two community stations, obviously just around the corner from each other. Kevin, why is this important to you?
It's massively important. We both look after the community of Southampton in different ways. We both have different listenerships. We have such a diverse community in Southampton. So Kelly looks after the Asian, ethnic, the minority groups, where we look after the student population. Together, we're looking after the community of Southampton as a whole. And it's so important that we work together to make sure we cover our remit in that sense.
Kelly, it's quite clear that you two get on with each other. And Kevin, looking at me, is really. And you two get on with each other. You're smiling now. Can you give me some examples of how you can collaborate to sort of serve the wider population here?
Well, there's two levels. One is technical. And the other words, how we serve. When Kevin's got a problem with technical, he'll ring me. When I've got a problem, I'll ring him up and say, okay, oh, we can do that, we can do that. Oh, you can borrow that, you can borrow that. It's not a problem. And we get it done. Because the important part of it is that we stay on air. We don't have the kind of money and the backup maybe the larger commercial stations have or indeed BBC will have because we've got to work on a shoestring. This is the same for every community radio station. The other way we do it, you know, when he does live broadcasts and everything else, he wants resources, we'll be there. We'll provide them support if we can. And the same thing works on it. You know, if I wanted an ad made, for instance, we've got an ad to made for Chichester University. He's a student. We want a student to do the ad. So I rang him up. He said, well, as soon as they come in, we'll get it done.
Of course, then you've got variation of voices. So you don't necessarily have your presenters making the adverts. Is that how it works?
Yeah, we don't have our presenters. That's kind of like a golden rule that you don't have your presenter doing an advert. But Kelly can have our presenters doing an advert on his station or a promo and vice versa. And we're regularly supporting each other in that. Like Kelly just mentioned, we will get this one voiced. I've got a volunteer meeting this evening. And hopefully there'll be one there that can voice this for Kelly tomorrow.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for hosting us today. Thank you, Kevin, as well. And if someone's listening to this interview and they're in the vicinity of Southampton, how can they get involved?
Well, just come ring on the door, 107 St Mary's Road, and welcome. As simple as that.
And that beautifully simple answer about how to get involved with Unity by knocking on the door really sums up the spirit of that place and so well articulated by Kelly there. But last word on this edition, it's back to Kevin.
Talking to you today, it's very clear you're running a high-achieving community radio station. I phrase it exactly the way you've articulated is that my job in running Summer Valley FM is to facilitate an environment for other people to get on. And in so doing, we're achieving as a collective, if you like. Let's look at the national picture at the moment. You've articulated your own background and, you know, almost at the 11th hour in that career, that colourful and high-achieving career, has come licensed community radio. We are still embryonic and there's much to come in the future. From a national agenda point of view, what do you think our needs are? Who do we need to be talking to and how can we go about it? At the moment, there's about 260 licenses here in the UK. And many of them are as great at articulating what we do as you do, but there seems to be a lack of a central voice.
There is, I think, an organisation that could represent all of the community stations, not only on a funding basis, but which is obviously our biggest challenge, because we don't get any public funding. And there's some talk about, you know, a percentage, a very small percentage, less than 1% of the licence fee going to community stations would be a fantastic idea, because we are filling that gap. And I don't see why that shouldn't happen immediately. I'm a licence payer myself. As you are, and I would be more than happy for a 1% rise for it all to go to community radio. But a central group to sort of kind of like, even if it was national advertising, potentially that could be run from a central group. Obviously, funding opportunities for all of these organisations, they're all in different fields, whether they're represents in London doing drum and bass 24 hours a day, or whether they're, you know, playing rock and roll because their target audience is an older clientele. We all have a need, and I think our biggest need as community stations today is getting that funding and support. Thank God we've got the lottery, you know, because they are supporting us with certain work, but we have to do extra work on top of our normal output to do special workshops and a project around that to get any of that funding. I desperately think that Ofcom needs to recognise that we are filling that gap. As the commercial stations become less local, and we fill that gap, I believe they should recognise us and potentially support us back. I think local councils should be supporting us rather than spending their money on national advertising. If it's a local event, then those local councils should be supporting us. That doesn't seem to be happening.
Are we really talking about a radio centre which does so much work for the commercial radio networks? Are we talking about a radio centre for our sector?
I believe so. And I think that's what should happen. Just a central place where we can get advice, support, funding opportunities. Obviously, it's up to us if we apply for that funding or whatever. And maybe somebody that has a voice there with Ofcom, as well as maybe a governmental voice even. Because I don't know how many listeners collectively, because we can't subscribe to Radar. And just to tap on that point, I wouldn't give £8,000 of donated money to Radar for our TSA anyway. There should be a £200 Radar amount that community radios, you know, can give to justify their listenership. If community radio is hitting 4 million people a week, they might only be hitting 2 million people a week. But that's a lot of people. That is part of our community. Not only is it national, but we're all individually, you know, we're Southampton, 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 nothing but Southampton, as you will be where you are. Totally local. But collectively, we are a national force that is broadcasting on FM to the public, and that needs to be addressed.
Kevin, it's great to meet a Kindred spirit. I think you and I could talk on all night. We're going to draw this particular conversation to a close. Let's keep in regular contact.
Yes, I can't wait. And please do keep in regular contact. Let's meet once a month or something.
And Kevin and I have kept in regular contact since we met on that occasion, and that all strengthens the network of community broadcasters in the UK, which is one of the main points of doing these programmes and me doing my tours. If you'd like to talk to me about any of the matters we've raised in this edition of the programme, do give me a call at my office, 01761 568 004. You can tweet me at The Dom Chambers. And on that note, I think I've taken up quite enough of your time for this outing of the programme. I'll see you back here, Third Sector Show, on In Radio, very soon.
We are In Radio.